for this NPR station.
But good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. We are in the last few minutes of the winter fun drive here at WMNF. We want to thank a bunch of people. Sean Canan is here, and a bunch of people have called in the last hour, and they're still calling in to help us reach that $250,000 goal. And we've got a challenge on the table, too. We are almost at the end of the drive, so this challenge is really important. This challenge is going to put us over the top sometime in the next few minutes. 813-239-9663. Sean, let's thank some of the people that have called in the last few minutes.
All right. Thanks. Constance Brazier from Tampa is donating $10 a month, rather, says loves both of the shows, becoming a Circle of Friends member. That's Alternative Health and Sustainable Living. Sorry about that. Also, Anonymous from Brooksville is supporting Economic Update for a $50 contribution. Marianne Street from Myakka City listens to John and Eve as much as she can. She says they're both wonderful. $20 donation. And Diva Eva from St. Petersburg is contributing $25. So we need to hear from you now. 813-239-9663. We need, I believe, less than $1,500 for the whole drive. And Rob, you're saying there's a challenge?
Yeah, and I'll tell you about that in just a second. Thanks to Christina in Tampa, $100 contribution. Thank you, Christina, for supporting WMNF. Deborah Savarese from Polk City is making an $88.50 donation. Loves the station, loves the diversity of music programs, and it's where she gets her news. And thanks to Anonymous, a $15 contribution. Anonymous, thank you. Kathleen Clemens, thanks for your nice donation. Thanks to John Sebastian Quelo from Port St. Lucie, a $5 donation. Rosemary Tantalo from Sarasota made a $75 donation, taking the public affairs speech to David K. Johnston, Donald Trump and the Age of Mendacity on CD. And thanks to Anonymous, a $20 contribution. So if we're just $1,500 away, here's the challenge. Mm-hmm. We have two donors making $500 donations each. If we can get five $100 donations or more. So in other words, if we get 10 $100 donations or more in the next half hour, we will get an extra $1,000, and that will definitely put us over the top.
Yeah, that will shatter the $250,000 raised by our generous donors. Thanks so much to everyone who's contributed so far, but if you have not contributed, this is going to be your final chance during this fundraising drive to contribute, and you can help meet a match. We'll get an extra $1,000 if we get 10 $100 donations right now. 813-239-9663. I want to quickly thank some of our food donors. Melita Coffee, located at 13925 58th Street North in Clearwater. Thank you for the variety of coffees you provided to keep our volunteers powered up. And Nature's Food Patch, located at 1225 Cleveland Street in Clearwater, has donated fig bars for volunteers. So thank you to those food donors. Now we want to thank our financial contributors, and I'm talking about you. 813-239-9663.
This drive is almost over, and if we get the 10 $100 donations, it will be over, because all those 10 donations will be matched. 813-239-9663. Let's hear Florida This Week from this past Friday night. It's a program that talks about state and local politics, and then we'll come back and let you know whether or not we reached the goal. Stick around. This is 88.5 FM.
This special presentation was produced in high definition by WEDU, Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota.
Coming up next, another mass shooting raises the question of how or if politicians will take any steps to protect the public from gun violence. A surprise upset in a state house election in Sarasota. Two politicians who would like to be governor debate immigration and sanctuary cities. And where will the money come from to build that proposed new Rays baseball stadium in Tampa? Political insights next on Florida This Week.
WEDU Studios, this is Florida This Week. And now, moderator Rob Lori.
Welcome back. This week our panelists are Adam Smith is the political editor for the Tampa Bay Times. Mike Suarez is a Tampa City councilman and a Democrat. Deborah Tamargo is the second vice president of the Florida Federation of Republican Women. And Mike Deason is an independent journalist. Well, it's great to have you here. Thanks for coming. Well, a 19-year-old armed with an AR-15 semi-automatic rifle and who had a history of mental problems and frequent run-ins with police entered a high school in Parkland, Florida on Valentine's Day and murdered 17 people.
The alleged shooter had been expelled from the school a year earlier. He also reportedly had made troubling posts on social media indicating a capacity for violence. Since the start of this year, there have been 30 mass shootings in the U.S. In the wake of the tragedy, at least one gubernatorial candidate, Democrat Phil Levine, called for a ban on semi-automatic and assault rifles. Senator Marco Rubio, who in 2016 received more than $3 million in campaign support from the NRA, was asked on Fox News whether now was the time to pass gun control legislation.
It's not, only because people don't know how this happened. I mean, who this person is, what motivated them, how did they get a hold of the weapon that they used for this attack. I think it's important to know all of that before you jump to conclusions that there's some law that we could have passed that could have prevented it. And there may be, but shouldn't we at least know the facts?
The mother of one of the victims called on President Trump to do something to stop the killings.
The gunman, a crazy person, just walks right into the school, knocks down the window of my child's door, and starts shooting her and killing her. President Trump, you say, what can you do? You can stop the guns from getting into these children's hands. Put metal detectors at every entrance to the schools. What can you do? You can do a lot. This is not fair to our families that our children go to school and have to get killed.
Mike, it seems there's something different this time.
There does. The students who were in that school and heard the shots, first off, that 11-second shooting video that we all saw and heard took us inside that school. And then the way the kids were talking seemed to have ignited the public. The problem, and where there is no difference, is in the politicians. Marco Rubio was so disingenuous, and this is not the time to talk. He was being a toady for the NRA, which has way too much clout and not enough members. They represent the gun manufacturers. It's an economic organization, not a gun owners organization. They have only 5 million active members. There's 100 million gun owners in the United States. And most people in America, including gun owners and including even members of the NRA, want further background checks, want to ban assault-type rifles like the AR-15 that was used in this and so many other incidences. And the NRA says, don't touch our guns. It's a Second Amendment right. Anton Scalia, not exactly a liberal, right, Deborah? Said that the right to have guns does not cover weapons that are unusual and assault-type weapons. He wanted to ban assault-type weapons. Ronald Reagan, not another flaming liberal, also wanted to ban assault-like weapons. So further background checks, banning of assault weapons, and banning of automatic weapon bullets, high capacity magazines. Yeah, that's what I was looking for. Yeah. The American public wants it. Gun owners want it, but people are afraid of the clout of the NRA, and it's got to stop. And Americans have to step up and say, we're going to primary you, not let the NRA primary you if you don't do what they want them to do.
Deborah, what about that? I mean, I think people are looking for solutions, background checks, banning assault rifles. What would you say to those ideas?
Well, I agree with the mental health issues that we need better background checks. That being said, I also believe we need to have more oversight of the FBI. I think not only the FBI director needs to resign, but everyone who is involved in this particular case. But I also want to hear...
You say that because the FBI got a tip last month that
yes.
this kid may be planning.
It could have prevented all of
this. How's that going to stop the next shooting, Deborah?
If you let Mike finish.
No, but if you're going to have the AR-15s out there with a new FBI, is that going to stop it?
Go ahead. Okay. I haven't heard anyone talk about banning the videos, the violent videos that we know desensitize these kids. I haven't heard anyone talk about banning gangster rap, which again desensitizes these kids.
Deborah, in Japan and other countries, they have the violent videos and they have the gangster rap in almost all the countries, but kids aren't, you know, using AR-15s to kill other kids in other countries.
They also have better parenting skills. They have tiger moms in those Asian countries. But I do believe that we do need better background checks and certainly the mental health screening. I think there were so many errors in this case. I don't believe in lawsuits. I don't believe that any money can bring back these children, but sue everyone involved and let's get rid of them.
Sue everyone involved. Micah, is there anything that people in Tallahassee or Washington, D.C., our elected leaders in Congress and in the legislature could do to prevent future events like this?
Well, I think that Mike mentioned some Republican stalwarts and icons that were part of agreeing that assault weapons shouldn't be there. One of them was George H.W. Bush. I mean, he had an assault weapon ban previously, and I don't think anybody disagreed with that at all. That ban has gone away. The AR-15 is a modified AK-47. And I remember specifically in 1994, Senator Bob Kerry, who was a Medal of Honor recipient, had a commercial that showed that that was a weapon that was used to hunt him as a soldier for the U.S. military. That's what those weapons are for. It should not be in the general public. It shouldn't be used for anything other than what it's meant to, which is to be in a soldier's hand during wartime. Having said that, I think that the legislature probably will not do any of the things that even Deborah has mentioned, which is to give more money for mental health screenings and testing. We have lost sight on how we can discuss this issue without it being on the extremes. Until we come to that agreement that something has to be done in a tangible way, not something intangible, but a tangible way, we're never going to solve this problem. And I think that we start with banning the assault weapons. I think that we do go into spending more on mental health screenings and checkups, especially when it comes to people who are in public schools. We have that right as taxpayers, that right as citizens, to make sure that those schools are always safe.
The AR-15 is a very, very popular firearm, and I think it's one out of every firearm sold is an AR-15. So as logical and as easy that sounds to ban AR-15s or assault weapons like them, I don't know that that's a solution. There are millions of them out there right now.
But if you stop the sale, okay, so...
But if you can do something, and God knows Florida, it's interesting, we've got these leaders in Tallahassee talking about boosting mental health funding. Florida is literally at the bottom of the country in terms of mental health services and funding. So there's nothing wrong with that. But if you can do something to link when somebody like this, where there's so many warning signs, a kid can just walk in anywhere and get one of these weapons, there's got to be some fix that we can stop that.
Historically... And I would go back to when we did have mental health funding and we had mental health facilities and hospitals and so forth. And it was the ACLU putting pressure on President Kennedy, and he took the funding away from those facilities, started Medicaid.
If your party had not spent 8 years trying to get rid of Obamacare, there would be a lot more mental health services
now. Psychoanalysts will tell you these troubled children, the videos. So let's make it comprehensive. I haven't heard any liberals talk about this, and this is what is really creating their psychotic episodes as well as these prescription drugs.
But Mike said we can't have a logical discussion about it. The majority of Americans, Democrats and Republicans, want to have a ban of assault weapons, want to have further background checks. You'll agree to that. A small percentage of people want to keep these weapons going. The NRA, zealots who say you can't change any gun laws, and people who are in the manufacturing business. The NRA is a lobbying organization for an economic organization, and that's the gun manufacturers in the United States.
What worries politicians and what makes politicians cower is not that the NRA gives $3 million to a Marco Rubio, it's that NRA voters vote. And they care, and they turn out and vote on this one issue in a way that the majority of Americans who think it's absurd that people can get an AR-15 that quickly don't.
Let me ask you a question. This kid, at the age of 18, was able to buy an AR-15, one of the most deadly rifles, Mike, as you pointed out, Mabe. He couldn't buy a pistol. He couldn't buy a Beretta or a Glock. You know, we have laws preventing kids from doing that. So why is it so easy to buy an AR-15?
And I will tell you, Rob, one of the things that frustrates me about this particular legislature, especially over the last 8 to 10 years, is that the misunderstanding that they are elected and they will do whatever they want to do and not listen to their voters. The way that we have, some of the folks that are in there, they don't really care about it. I really don't think they do. They are kowtowing to whatever they think is an issue that the caucus will support. So the Republican caucus will tell them, you're going to vote this way and never go against it. I remember a time, even in the short 20 years, there were Republican legislators and Democratic legislators that could come together and they could agree on things that made sense for Florida. That's the reason why I gave that example of George H.W. Bush. He did not get any kind of pushback from Republicans or Democrats in the Congress about that, because they understood it was the right thing to do for the United States at that time. I don't know why we can't come together and say, this is a weapon that we should not be selling, and to make sure that we do not have the kind of loopholes, the legislature has to come to the table and say, look, we're not going to allow somebody to buy any weapon, unless they have the exact same type of background check that is necessary, and maybe even have some mental health assessment so that they can get the gun when they've been checked out. If we don't do that, then we're doing nothing.
All right.
Well, one last comment, and that is we can take all the rifles off the market. If we don't change the culture and we don't change the mental health of these children, they're going to use bombs and they're going to use cars and they're going to use other weapons of mass destruction. So we need to correct the culture.
All right. Well, in a special election in Sarasota for State House District 72, Democrat Margaret Good defeated her Republican opponent, James Buchanan, who's the son of the sixth-term Congressman Vern Buchanan.
Good won by 7%. It was an upset in a traditional Republican stronghold where President Trump won by more than 4% over Hillary Clinton and where Republicans hold a 12,000 voter advantage. Democrats called it a bellwether for the fall elections. Republicans chalked up the loss to out-of-state money that poured in to help Good. Good will have to run for re-election this fall. This is the 36th time a Democrat has defeated a Republican in a state legislative race since the 2016 election.
So, Adam, is it a bellwether?
Yeah, it's absolutely a bellwether. This is the third time in Florida. We saw a big state Senate, very competitive state Senate race in Miami. We saw the mayor's race in St. Petersburg, where both parties are fighting hard. This matters. And this was a pretty giant swing from a nearly 5-point win by Trump to a 7-point almost blowout by Margaret Good. Now, truth be told, this district is not a hardcore red district. It's Sarasota, sort of beach, highly educated, country club-ish community. Buchanan was not the greatest candidate. But there's a lot of reason Republicans should be worried about the trend that's happening.
And this claim that out-of-state money came in to help Good win this election, it's going to be different in the fall. Republicans say it's going to be a different election in the fall.
Well, I think there's always out-of-state money, and I think Buchanan was perfectly well-funded. I don't think that was his big problem. But it is true, there's a difference when Democrats can point their fire on one district as opposed to a statewide where you've got multiple races and the Republicans have a giant financial advantage.
All right, Deborah, what do you think? Was it a bellwether? Is it a sign the Republicans are going to have a tough fall?
Well, it could be. unless we are able to clone what we did in 2016 and attract more women voters to vote for our candidates. And that was the clear difference. The Democrats turned out the women. The Republicans did not. It was a record number of women, a record number of voters in a special election. So I think that is the difference, and we need to get back to what we were doing in 16.
With President Trump looming over the party, are women going to come back in big numbers to the Republican Party?
Well, they came back in 2016 for us. And,
okay. And now we know a lot more about the president and his personal life.
Well, we know a lot more about how effective he is for our families right now, our public safety issue, our economic issues, and that's what we as women really care about. We're really big on public safety and economic and freedom.
The difference, though, Deborah, when he ran against a flawed Democratic candidate. Hillary Clinton was a terrible candidate. Most other Democratic candidates, I think, would have defeated the president, but she was terrible. And some of the women who crossed over and or on the fence, the independents, and Florida is having more and more independents, are, despite anything you say that he has done, are there's an abhorrent feeling about the moral tone that's being set in Washington, and I hear it from women all the time. How can this man be our president? How can we turn to him? How can we tell our kids this is a role model for our kids? No matter what's being done there, the women are upset about that. I think that it is a problematic election coming up for the Republican Party if you're counting on women coming your way.
Well, Mike, that is a question. I mean, Stormy Daniels, one of Donald Trump's alleged paramours, mm-hmm. is in Tampa this weekend. I mean, she's going to make a big deal about the alleged relationship.
We're going there after the show.
But I'm wondering, are women going to be coming back to the Republican Party?
I think that too many times in an electoral process, we start to distill it to a group or one group or one thing. It starts with one good candidate, and that's not a pun. She was a very good candidate. She was running against a not-so-good candidate, okay? And when you run a good race, and it doesn't matter how much money you get either locally or outside, if you're a good candidate, people will want to listen to you. Problem that we have is that we haven't had enough good candidates on our side, on the Democratic side, and we haven't had the funding necessary to even get to the starting line, let alone to get to the finish line. So until we get those good candidates, and I think right now in the Bay Area, we have a lot of very good Democratic candidates running for the legislature, and I think it's going to change the way that the map looks now. But if we don't get the money to make these good candidates even better, if we don't get the money to get their message out, we're not going to win either. So it doesn't matter if women come out or not. We need to make sure we get great candidates to come on out, and I think we had one in Sarasota.
All right. Well, a Democratic candidate for governor and a legislative leader who's toying with a run for governor held a fiery debate over immigration in sanctuary cities this week.
Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum and House Speaker Richard Corcoran, a Republican who's eyeing the gubernatorial race, came out slugging during the 45-minute debate aired live on Facebook. Gillum accused Corcoran of race baiting and trying to turn Florida into a show-me-your-papers police state, while Corcoran defended his anti-sanctuary position by saying it's intended to keep dangerous criminals from roaming the streets and preying on innocent victims.
Basically, it's very simple. All it says is state and local authorities, you need to cooperate with the federal authorities, and if you have a criminal illegal immigrant in your custody, you have to hold them for just 48 hours until the authorities can come. That's all the bill does.
This debate is not about the rule of law. It is not about a disagreement between whether or not we agree with the rule of law. We both do. What this is about is an ad that the speaker has chosen to spend $1.4 million across the state of Florida trying to convince Floridians that undocumented persons are either murderers or all out intent to harm us.
Deborah, let's start there. If someone is in a sanctuary city, are they more likely to be the victim of crime from an undocumented immigrant?
Well, I don't know if they are or not, but some of the sanctuary cities that have been in Florida have had a higher incident of crime. Palm Beach County has been one of those counties. So there is a higher incidence there.
Higher incident of crime by undocumented immigrants?
undocumented, so the sheriff's office say. So ICE, what does ICE ask for? They ask for a detainer. What does a detainer mean? That you cooperate and that you follow the law. So the rule of law is the issue, and it does make us safer when the sheriffs cooperate and don't just let criminals. Now remember, they have to be arrested a criminal act. It's not go show me your papers walking down the street and arbitrarily, you know, picking someone because they happen to look like they're Asian or Indian or you know, Hispanic or something. So they have to have committed a crime. What does the sheriff do? They follow the law. They notify ICE. They issue the detainer. And if ICE feels like they're a threat, they come and pick them up after they've served their sentence.
This is the question, is that when I watch the Corcoran ad, that's the feeling I get, is that he's saying that if you're an undocumented immigrant and you commit a crime, you're being released by local sheriff's departments. But that's not true, is it?
No.
Because once you're accused of committing a crime, you stay in jail.
Anybody does, whether a suspected undocumented immigrant or not. Yeah. You know, I talked to a woman in Pasco County the other day, a mother in Pasco County, and she watched this debate, and one of the last things Corcoran said was nobody knocks on the podium three times. Nobody should get that knock on the door and hear that their child was murdered by an undocumented immigrant. This was the morning after the shooting in South Florida. And she said, you know what? I've got kids in school. I'm not worried about an undocumented immigrant. I'm worried about a crazy shooter coming in my school. That's what I want Corcoran to focus on.
And, you know, one of the things about sanctuary cities, it's not actually a true term here in the state of Florida. Deborah said it perfectly. The sheriffs have control over that. None of the cities control their jails for the most part. So what happens is that they haven't been paid to hold these folks. That's part of the reason. And I think that the sheriff in Pinellas County had worked it out with lots of other sheriffs throughout the state in order to solve that problem, because they're not people that are talking about sanctuary cities or sanctuary counties. So it's a bogus issue. It's something that Corcoran wants to push in order to bring up his numbers. I think we all know that it's bogus. I think that the debate itself was bogus. The idea that you're going to argue a point that doesn't make any legal sense whatsoever is ridiculous.
And here's I would say politically, I think anybody, and very few people watch this, but anybody hears Corcoran say, all we're doing is holding somebody for 48 hours until ICE comes. That does sound like a reasonable position.
But
to have.
I thought it was the dumbest debate that I have ever seen. It's from two people.
Mike,
that
the average
person wouldn't know who either of them are, even though Corcoran may be the most powerful person in the state of Florida. Nobody knows these guys. It's a non-issue. It's not really happening.
Deborah, we've got to go. Well, late last week, the Tampa Bay Rays announced their support for building a new baseball stadium in Ybor City, saying Ybor is their sole focus.
Just one big question remains. How will it be funded? A new stadium could cost $800 million, maybe more. The Rays ownership has already said that they are willing to contribute $150 million to the cost of construction. What about the rest? Tampa Mayor Bob Buckhorn made it clear that the local sales tax increase that paid for the Raymond James Stadium will not be used in this deal. The exact method of getting the extra $650 million has not yet been decided. Longtime Tampa City Councilman Charlie Miranda says he thinks the city of Tampa should pay off its $900 million in bond debt and fix its infrastructure before it uses any public money for a stadium.
So, Mike, where will that extra money come from to build an $800 million stadium with a retractable roof?
I think that we need to talk to the Rays first. The $150 million amount that was bantered about by them, they even know that that is a bad starting point. They're going to have to put in significant amounts of dollars. We are not going to pay publicly for a stadium. We can do certain things, as we did with Vinix Project, concerning community redevelopment areas. But other than that, we're not going to build a stadium for them, for sure.
Okay, so does anybody else think that gap between $150 million and $800 million is huge and insurmountable?
I think it's doable. I think private sector that benefits from it, hotels and industry.
The private sector.
I think they're going to step up.
Well, before we go, what other news stories should we be paying attention to? Mike, let's start with you. Your other big story.
I think that it's actually a continuation of the Parkland shootings. I think that that's going to continue into next week. This will not be going away anytime soon. I think that Congress is going to have to act. I think that the president has even looked at maybe tightening up in terms of background checks, other things.
It will be a big issue for the next month. It is not going away.
All right. Mike Deason, your other big story.
There was hoopla this week about the opening of the expansion of Tampa International Airport. I think there's a likelihood in the next 20 years they'll default on the bonds, because the way that the bonds are structured is they're being paid off by rental car fees and parking. Parking, they had to raise the rates at the airport to the highest, among the highest in the country. People are not parking. They're not using rental cars because of Uber and Lyft. And if Tampa International makes 35% of its revenue from parking and the rental car fees, and that's how they're going to pay off the bond, I don't think it's going to happen.
All right, Deborah, you have the big story.
Well, I have a feel-good story. The Vila Brothers Park in West Tampa, a group of citizens are getting together, including the Vilas, and we are looking at funding that into a full park, hopefully with the cooperation of the city. There's a meeting March 7th, 7 p.m. at the JCC to make it a patriotic park with full facilities, restrooms, and equipment, and shelters, and so forth. And so I'm looking forward to being part of that.
All right.
Since it's all about me, I'm going to hype a story I've got coming out this weekend, piggyback on what we were talking about a unprecedented grassroots sort of organic organizing that's going on across the state, especially by women in Tampa Bay. And these are progressives. It has the potential, at least, to have a huge impact on the elections.
All right. Well, thank you all for your insights. What a great show. Thanks for watching Florida This Week.
Well, that was Florida This Week from this past Friday night. Deborah Tamarga was the Republican on that panel. Mike Suarez was the Democrat. Adam Smith was one of the journalists. So was Mike Deason. Adam writes for the Tampa Bay Times. Mike used to work for WTSP Channel 10. Well, Sean Cadan and I are back, and we're trying to raise some money. And Sean got some good news. A bunch of people have called in.
Yeah, $100 donation from Gene Campbell from Seminole is getting the Like Really Smart T-shirt, and Gene is helping us to meet that match. We needed 10 people to donate $100. Thank you, Gene, for being one of those people to call 813-239-9663.
And we had donations from John and Debbie Butts, made an $88 donation, and Susan Warrens from Tampa made a $500 contribution. She likes a lot of programs here on WMNF. Susan, thanks a lot. And thanks to Anonymous and Seminole, a $600 donation for executive session. And with those donations, we have reached the $250,000 goal. Yeah.
I do believe those fireworks are a violation, but we're going to let that go. This is Craig Kopp. I'm the general manager of WMNF, and right now we're sitting at about $251,000. That's over a quarter of $1 million raised during this winter fund drive. We had an interesting drive. The phones went down. We took a pause. We came back. You came back with us. That $250,000, that quarter of $1 million, it's all about the listeners of this radio station and their support of an absolutely unique broadcasting entity in the United States of America. And it's beyond understanding that you understand how unique that is. I'm a little choked up. That's $250,000 from probably about 10,000-11,000 people.
And just sitting here in the room, surrounded by about 20 people who've given up a good portion of the last week to answer phones, to come down here and volunteer their time. I mean, these great folks in here, the cheering section in here.
Yeah, I'll cheer for them.
Yeah, thank you.
Bravo.
Thank you.
It's unbelievable. The vibe's incredible. You, the listener, thank you so much. There's no way we can thank you. Oh, there is one way. We will continue to do what WMNF does, and we will continue to do that as long as we possibly can, as long as we have your support. And this $251,000 proves we have your support. We're going to keep on keeping on. Thank you very much. If you haven't had a chance, we'll keep the phones going till noon. Then you can always go online to WMNF.org and make your pledge. It's our time, people. I really think that. There's a feeling in this room. There's a feeling in this radio station. There's a feeling in this town. There's a feeling in this country. And we're going to be with you all the way. Thank you so, so much. $251,000 and counting. Let's take a deep breath and get back at it.
Couldn't have done the marathon without local restaurants, too, that fed our hungry volunteers. And there's still more restaurants we want to thank. Sean Canaan is still here. Sean?
Yeah, I want to thank you to our new in-kind food donors, Victor and Claudia at Abby's Health and Nutrition, located at 14374 North Dale Mabry Highway in Tampa, for the beans and rice, pasta and veggies they sent for lunch today. We appreciate the owner, Abby, for her continued support of community radio. This is their first prepared food donation, but they've given gift certificates in the past. So thank you to them, and also thanks to Cabot Creamery Cooperative. They've provided cheese for the hungry volunteers answering phones at 88.5 FM. They're online at www.cabotcheese.coop. Thanks to the food donors, and thanks to everyone who volunteered and everyone who made a donation. Thanks to you, we did make our goal. And Rob has one more person to thank.
Yeah, this donation just came in. Suzanne Ferguson from Tucson, Arizona. $35 contribution. Thank you, Suzanne, for your nice contribution. You can still call one of those phone answers who you heard clapping a few minutes ago. You can call them at 813-239-9663, or you can make your contribution online on our secure website, WMNF.org. And we went over the $250,000 goal, and we are closing in on maybe $252,000 with any luck. And that'll keep us going for a long, long time. This is WMNF. We're going to pick up hear more of Democracy Now in just a moment. We weren't able to play the entire Democracy Now at 9 o'clock, so we're going to do that in just a moment. More of Amy Goodman's interview with the mayor of San Juan, Puerto Rico, about the ongoing crisis there as electric is in short supply, and recovery, too. The recovery of the infrastructure and housing is also taking a long time in Puerto Rico. We're going to hear that right now. This is the end of today's Democracy Now!
So it is important that people know that things are different. There have been mayors, the mayor of Comerío, that have talked about, look, let me help. What can I do from the standpoint of the municipality to ensure that you can do your job? And what they have been told, and this is a quote from the mayor of Comerío, José Santiago, what they have been told is, look, you cannot open this road for us to go up the hill and do the work that we need to do because the Army Corps of Engineers has subcontracted that. And the Army Corps of Engineers is waiting for the company that they have subcontracted to bring their equipment to Puerto Rico to get the job done, to which the mayor has said, but I have the equipment, I can get it done right now. And they've said from PREPA, well, we're sorry, but we have to wait because we already subcontracted that. The private companies are starting to...
Okay, we've got a little bit of setback here. Let's see if we can reconnect with Democracy Now! You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. Seems like we reached this point many times as we're listening to Democracy Now. Here's another donation that just came in. Thanks to a nice donation from Matthew Bistock. And Matthew, thanks for that nice contribution of helping WMNF stay on the air. We'll see if we can reconnect with Democracy Now here. And if not, we'll go back and play you some more music. Let's see if we can figure out what the problem here is on Democracy Now. All right. Well, that...
been told, and this is a quote from the mayor of Comerío, José Santiago. What they have been told is, look, you cannot open this road for us to go up the hill and do the work that we need to do because the Army Corps of Engineers has subcontracted that. And the Army Corps of Engineers is waiting for the company that they have subcontracted to bring their equipment to Puerto Rico to get the job done, to which the mayor has said, but I have the equipment, I can get it done right now. And they've said from PREPA, well, we're sorry, but we have to wait because we already subcontracted that. The private companies are starting to leave by mid-March. But yesterday, the Army Corps of Engineers said that they no longer could comply with their goal of having 90 to 95% of the island nation of Puerto Rico energized by February, that they were thinking that that could happen perhaps by March, but it would be better off if they said by April. So what they promised first by December, which the governor and the Army Corps of Engineers had a tit for tat regarding that, then they promised for February, and now they're saying, you know, it's most likely in April. So this keeps pushing back any opportunity that we have. Now, what does this create? It creates desperation amongst people. So that people, when you ask them in the street, are you in favor of privatization of the electrical company? They say yes. Now, when you ask them, well, and the governor of Puerto Rico made a terrible statement yesterday. When asked in New York, why would anybody buy PREPA, the Puerto Rico Power Authority, he said, well, there's a lot of space for making profits because the Puerto Rican people are used to paying high prices for energy. So as telling those that were listening, look, you may lower the cost of production of energy, leave the price at a very high, and this gap will be yours. If that's not disaster economics, and if that is not setting the stage for the commercialization of services that are there to promote equality amongst people, I don't know what it is.
We'll continue with Carmen Yulín Cruz, the mayor of San Juan, Puerto Rico, talking about privatization, FEMA, President Trump, and more coming up.
Una mano que me guíe entre tinieblas.
And again, thanks to all those great people that made contributions to WMNF during our 11-day fund drive. It was start off as a 7-day fund drive and stretched into 11 days because we had those phone problems for 4 days. But we reached our goal just a few minutes ago. Thank you if you've made a contribution to WMNF this year. If you haven't made one, you can always call us up. You can call us up right now at 813-238-8001 and make that contribution right now.
The island. We continue with our interview with the mayor of San Juan, Carmen Yulín Cruz. Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez and I spoke to her on Friday. I asked her if she's opposed to the privatization of PREPA, the Puerto Rican Power Authority, the largest power authority in the United States.
Yes, yes. And I've been opposed ever since I was a member of the House of Representatives 9 years ago now. And I'll tell you why. Electricity isn't only about getting the lights in your house turned on. Electricity is about providing people access to equal services. So a private company, which is moved by profits, as it should be, may decide that in this very remote urban area of Puerto Rico, it is not worthwhile for them to put money into the system. It is not worthwhile for them to replace the light poles. So all of a sudden, some Puerto Ricans will be looked at with a different lens than other Puerto Ricans. I'm against privatization of public schools for the exact same thing. There is a reason why essential services are handled by the government in an island nation that's 100 miles long by 35 miles wide.
Mayor, I wanted to ask you about another issue, the issue of the role of the Puerto Rican diaspora in the United States. There are about more than 5 million U.S. citizens of Puerto Rican descent living in the mainland United States. Their role since this crisis has started in being able to provide support and assistance to their fellow Puerto Ricans on the island.
Yes. And in fact, I think we are now the diaspora. There are 5 million Puerto Ricans in the United States. There's about 3 million Puerto Ricans in the island nation of Puerto Rico. But the diaspora has been the echo of our voices. So many times they have in the past been at the forefront of very big fights. When did what we had to do in order to get the Navy out of bombing the island of Vieques, the municipal island of Vieques, when we joined together in all different forces to get the release of Oscar Lopez Rivera a year ago. So the diaspora has been essential in ensuring that our voices are heard and magnified.
Mayor Carmen Yulín Cruz, as you speak to us from San Juan, you just recently returned from Washington, where you were the guest of New York Senator Gillibrand at the State of the Union address of Trump. You certainly had run-ins with President Trump after Hurricane Maria, when he finally went down to the island and tossed rolls of paper towels at hurricane survivors. He also attacked you and Puerto Ricans. He said such poor leadership ability by the mayor of San Juan and others in Puerto Rico who are not able to get their workers to help. You responded by talking about his utter statement of hypocrisy. Have you changed your views of President Trump? What is your assessment of how he responded to the crisis, the hurricane in Puerto Rico?
Well, you know, this has never been about President Trump or myself. This was always about saving lives and ensuring that the people of Puerto Rico got what they needed and still continue to get what we need in order to move forward. Now, you know, when you sit there in Congress with all that power right there, it is, the activity itself has a magical ring to it. But then when you start hearing the president talk about and using language that is divisive, using language that destructs the ability of the American people to join forces together, then it's sort of the magic starts fading away somehow. I was very honored that Senator Gillibrand took it upon herself to invite me. It gave us, again, another opportunity to use various platforms to ensure that the American people and the powers to be know that this is not mission accomplished, as it was said the Tuesday before, the day before the State of the Union. FEMA said mission accomplished, we're stopping all the deliveries of water and food to Puerto Rico. Now, it allowed me and the senator and many others the opportunity to use different platforms to call FEMA out on that, and lo and behold, they decided not to do that. So what I really want the American people to continue to understand is that, look, I would want nothing more than to stand in Democracy Now and say, thank God, things are happening and federal agencies are stepping up. But yesterday, the Department of Labor of the Puerto Rican government, and of course, you know, the secretary was appointed by the Governor Rosselló, was saying, no, we haven't been able to pay because we haven't gotten the money from FEMA. And most of the American people probably think that out of that $4.9 billion that was approved between November and December, that we've gotten some of that money. We've gotten zero. Just because you throw millions of dollars at something, it doesn't mean that you're fixing the problem. It doesn't mean that you're fixing what is wrong. And again, I think that what happened in Puerto Rico, and some people, you know, say, well, if Puerto Rico was a state, this wouldn't happen. Well, I have one word for you, Katrina. You know, when people don't put their heart and soul into what they are doing, things go wrong. When they don't see the magnitude of the suffering of the people and just look at it from 10,000 feet above or 1,000 feet above in a helicopter, things go wrong. So I think Puerto Rico should be studied from the standpoint of the federal agencies to ensure that what happened in Katrina and what happened in Puerto Rico does not happen again. I had a short conversation with the mayor of Houston, and we were both saying we don't understand why the money that comes to the municipalities from FEMA has to go first to the state, through the federal level, then to the state level, then it's provided to the municipalities. And, you know, here's the mayor of Houston and here's the mayor of San Juan thinking exactly the same. So it isn't a political issue. And I think that's what many people in the Trump administration fail to understand. It is a human issue. It is a humanitarian crisis that wasn't handled properly. And that mishandling of it has led to many other things. Now, did we have problems before that? Yes. Have the problems increased after Irma and Maria? Indeed, they have. And people say, well, you know, we have a credibility issue. Yes, we do. The whitefish situation gave the central government of Puerto Rico a credibility issue. The situation about a program called Tu Hogar Renace, which again, it was giving a very small company that didn't meet all the requirements, a multi-million dollar contract, which was just taken back a few days ago. All of that provides a credibility issue. But the governor of Puerto Rico went to Congress and asked for $94 million. So he thought we needed $94 million. And a few days ago, they were celebrating $16 billion. $94 billion and $16 billion. Will that be enough? If you ask for 94, now you can't be celebrating 16. Are they important? Of course they are. Are they needed? Of course they are. Will that be enough? Well, from the account of the central government, it will not nearly be enough. And I think this is also the time now to look at the relationship between Puerto Rico and the United States and ensure that Puerto Rico stop being a colony of the United States once and for all.
Mayor Yulin Cruz, the FEMA issue, this, you mentioned the whitefish contract, which was canceled. Then you had the $156 million contract for a one-woman company to deliver 30 million meals. She delivers 50,000. FEMA approves a $30 million contract for tarps. Not one is delivered. Should there be criminal prosecutions here? Mm-hmm. And how are you dealing with these issues now? Are you somehow recouping the money?
Number one, if there should be investigations, and if they result in the fact that people have not done what they're supposed to do and they committed criminal acts, they should be prosecuted. Because we cannot allow disasters to be the breeding ground of what Naomi Klein, of course, has called disaster capitalism. So what we are seeing is that the acts of central government and some acts of FEMA have made this a breeding ground for inappropriate behavior, and in fact have made this a breeding ground for people to suffer. And what does that open the path for? Privatization. 50% of our schools as of 2 weeks ago were not energized. Let's say it's 60% now. The majority of our students with special ed are not back at school yet. The majority of the schools are still going on a part-time basis. So what does that mean? Well, of course, the governor finds breeding ground because people are dissatisfied to privatize the school system. But the school system is about so much more than just what you learn in books. And let me pause here for a second and say that the hearts of the people of San Juan go out to the people of Parkland School in Florida. And really, this cannot continue to happen in the United States. Lives cannot continue to be lost because of gun violence. And that's an issue that has to be dealt with in a swift and appropriate manner. And in balancing all of the criteria that you can balance. But as mayor of San Juan, I want to extend our condolences and our wishes that this finally sets a fire on the hearts of people in Congress and on the Trump administration to ensure that something gets done to finish that. Going back to education in Puerto Rico.
Well, that's an interview that Amy Goodman did this morning with the mayor of San Juan, Carmen Yulín Cruz, and you can see the entire interview at the website, democracynow.org. Thanks to all those people that have called in during our fund drive. We reached our goal. We raised more than $250,000, and you can still make your contribution by calling 813-238-8001. Stay tuned for Midpoint with Sean Canan. This is WMNF Tampa.